Today, we're going to talk about meeting your children's needs. Some of this is something that we assume, and it's just very normal for us to accept. But sometimes we don't think about this. We just try to do it without thinking very hard. Often we may have a child born into a family, and you are very well aware of your role in meeting your child's needs. You know that you have to feed them. You know that you have to buy them a nice crib that meets certain guidelines, and you have to kind of give them a room and buy them a changing table and start to buy diapers and wipes. And this thing just evolves over time, and pretty soon you're spending quite a bit of money. We're at a stage in our house right now where it used to be I had all kinds of food, too much to eat. Then we had some kids. We have five, right? And so there's food. It's just not all this leftover food usually. But now it's at a point where Josh usually sits to my right at the table. When I'm eating, if it's an especially delicious meal and I'm especially hungry, I'm used to assuming that that last piece of chicken or that last thing will still be there. And it's in the last few weeks that I'm realizing if I don't get through my food, that last piece of chicken might not be there. It might be on Josh's plate. And I've had to work really hard to not get frustrated by that. I have to accept that. And there were some times Sarah would say, you know, honey, you need to, how was that? Josh would take something and go on his plate. And he's just eating. It's just his appetite. And I might say, wow, I was going to eat that. And Sarah would say, well, should he give it to you? And I've had to say, no, Josh, you're a growing boy. You can have that. He's very satisfied with that, and then he goes to munching on that thing that it is. And they grow, and children have needs, and their needs continue to develop. And some of these things you just naturally meet. But we don't often stop and think carefully about the needs that we're meeting. We just kind of do it haphazardly without a plan. And when we do that, we end up meeting certain needs and maybe overlooking other ones. So we need to talk about this. Paul, in Ephesians chapter 6 and verse 4, which we've talked about, I didn't put it in your notes, but it is something that we keep coming back to. He says, bring up your children. And that word bring up is a word that means literally to feed. It means to feed your children. But he's talking more than just food here. He's not just mentioning food. We kind of know that we're supposed to feed food to our children. We do know that. But the word actually means more than this. It means to provide for the need. Feed your children what they need. And it's more than just food. You provide to your children in your care what they need. And it's more than that. It's more than just giving them what they need. It's giving them what they need so that they reach a certain goal. There's a purpose that you're feeding them towards. You're trying to reach a goal with your children through this. And the goal that this word is speaking about is you're feeding them until they become mature and are able to feed themselves. And again, it's not just food. And so the question is, as parents, are we understanding what our children need? Are we making sure that they receive what they need? And are we doing all of this in a way that is focused on the goal of them becoming a mature adult who can take care of themselves? Again, sometimes we just let the next thing happen. We read a book, and we just keep turning the next chapter, and whatever's there, we just read it. But as parents, we have to do more than just keep turning the next chapter. We actually have to look ahead and understand what we're trying to accomplish. Sometimes my wife and I will talk, and often she's the one initiating this and is the most perceptive about these things. This matter of nurturing and nourishing and feeding, often the mothers are more perceptive, and husbands would do well to listen to what their wives are saying about the needs of their children. But often, that mother will understand if this child is going to be an adult right now, there's something that they need. There's a skill they need to develop. There is an activity they need to involve themselves in. There is a topic they need to learn. There's a character weakness that needs to be improved. There's a social skill that's missing. Or there's a personality weakness that needs to be solved. And often, mothers and sometimes fathers will sense this, and together you have to work to meet that need. You have to say, if this thing that's happening in their life keeps happening, or this need keeps occurring, and I don't solve this, I don't meet this, what's that going to mean when they're an adult someday? The conversation might sound like this, you know, if, and put your child's name in there, any one of them, if you have more than one, you put that name in there and you say, what they're acting like right now and the need that they're showing in their life right now, if this doesn't get solved or met, what's that going to look like in a 13-year-old? What's that going to look like in a 17-year-old? And is that kind of person going to be ready for life? And every now and then you realize, I need to solve this now. Sometimes in our family, we do this, and something we've noted in the past that we try to work on is social development. Being in a church setting, it's easy for our kids, any of our kids, to come in, sit there, do what we're supposed to do, and then we go home. And we're trying to teach our children, when you come to church, you talk to people. And so sometimes I'll ask them, who did you talk to today? Or we'll go to church and we'll say, you need to talk to two people today that are not your friends. Talk to two grown people. Emily talked to a couple ladies, and Josh, and I want to ask, who did you talk to and what did you talk about? And sometimes we'll ask them and they'll say, and it'll be the same two people, and one of them was a friend and it wasn't even a grown-up. And we'll say, well, okay. And that is not necessarily something that we're going to spank them for right now, but it's something that we're working on in a different way. And it's an ongoing conversation that we're having with them. Because if they become 13 and 14 and they've never been taught to talk to an adult, what's that going to look like, right? We have to think about those things. And I probably can credit my wife for helping me realize this, because I'm running around talking to everybody as a pastor, not really aware of if my kids are talking to anyone or not. And that's important. And there's so many things. I want to look at this. If we ask the question, what do my children need? Guess what? You don't necessarily need a psychology degree to answer that question. One thing that you can do is you can actually look at the life and the childhood of Jesus himself. Luke chapter 2 and verse 52, which I failed to put in the notes. I will make sure that when I get this online, I put this reference in the notes. Luke chapter 2 and verse 52 tells us one of the very few insights into the childhood of Jesus. It says that Jesus, and this is about age 12 in his life, it says Jesus increased, he developed, he made progress, he advanced, he took forward steps. He improved and there are four things listed. As a young child, he developed in these four ways: in wisdom, in stature, in favor with God, and in favor with man. And it's helpful. If this is Jesus, right? This verse is not given to us to teach us about child raising, but it does give us a paradigm through which we can look at our child raising, because if this is Jesus as a child, we want our children to be Christ-like as well. Certainly come to know Jesus as Savior, but if this is good for Jesus, this is good for our children too. So here's the question. Are your children making progress in wisdom? Are they making progress in their physical development? Are they making progress in their relationship with God? Is God continually more and more pleased with what he's seeing in their life? And number four, Are they making progress in their social development? Are people around them more and more influenced, impacted, touched by what they see in your child's life? And sometimes you'll notice as a parent, maybe you're really focused on one of these things, but you're not doing so well in this, and you have to look at what you're doing with your children and say, how can we be more balanced in our approach and make sure that all their needs are being met? Some families with your strengths and weaknesses and interests can by default focus on certain things because they've been emphasized in your culture and in your home background. Or sometimes because they weren't emphasized in your childhood, you emphasize them to make up for that, and then you overlook other things. And we need to step back and just say, am I being biblical? Am I being balanced? These four things can be categorized this way. Jesus made progress in his education and his personal skill set. Number two, his physical health and maturity was being tended to, and he was making progress. Number three, his relationship with God was improving. Number four, his ability to relate to other people was improving. Let's talk about the first one, meeting educational needs. We live in a culture that most of our cultures value, even America itself, values education. So this is not something that is new. You're not sitting here and saying, oh, I have to help my child get an education. No, we all understand the importance of that in theory. But we have to make sure that putting our children in a school is not our solution to that alone. See, putting your child in a school does not automatically educate them properly. You see, putting them in a church does not automatically make them all they're supposed to be spiritually either. It's not just as simple as putting them in an institution and being glad you picked one. It's more than that. That is an important part of what's going on. This kind of wisdom encompasses both general education and a specific skill set. You look at Jesus, even at age 12, and you can say, yes, he was the Son of God, and so he knew things about the Scriptures that, well, the thing with Jesus that was unique was because he was God and man, when he spoke about the Word of God, there was an added layer and depth of authority. And he had a personal grasp of Scripture that only God could have. And so when the Pharisees and religious leaders heard him talking to them as a 12-year-old boy, they were impacted not necessarily with how much information he knew, but how he handled himself and how he spoke about things. And that idea of him having great authority and understanding continued throughout his ministry. However, he also received a very good education. That wasn't magic. Just because he was God didn't mean that he could get up and just play toys all the time. And if he had to preach a sermon at five, he could go preach a sermon because he was God. He was a part of a normal development process. And because he was God, that was especially powerful when he did speak. But you study the life of Jesus. Jesus was a master at being able to express himself, at being able to understand the natural world around him. He was a master at communicating thoughts using stories, using science, using history, using all kinds of things to talk to people. He was an educated man. Now, he didn't go off to seminary, but his childhood education was stellar. It was strong. It was solid. Our children, likewise, need to receive a comprehensive education. They need to be developed in their reading, in their writing, in their speaking abilities. They need to be developed in mathematics and science and history, literature, and other crucial subjects. I encourage you, as you read the Gospels and you read the things that Jesus said, he understood economics, he understood science, natural science, he understood business, he understood government, he understood vocabulary of all kinds, literature, storytelling. Jesus was able to utilize a lot of things, and it wasn't just because he was God. He was trained. And then he used that as God in a powerful way. Just because you send your kids off to school doesn't mean they're getting a proper education. And my purpose here today is not to talk about what kind of schooling your child gets, because the fact is, whether you put your kids in a Christian school, an unchristian but private charter type of a school, a public school, or you do like me and my wife do and homeschool, whatever you do that way, you should never feel like one is right and the other one is wrong. You have to know, number one, what you can do as a family. Number two, what needs to be done for your family. That is how you make those choices. I've had people tell me, Pastor, we had to put our kids in the Christians in the public school. We feel really bad about that. And I said, why? Because if you can't homeschool and you can't afford a Christian school, where's the sin in putting your kids in a public school? There is none. What it does, though, is it means that you have to be on your A game when it comes to your spiritual life and your family life and your church involvement. There's not a lot of room for error. You have to do a good job at all of this. But God can certainly work that out. Same is true for a family who homeschools like us. Just because my wife is a trained educator and this is in her blood and she does a really good job does not mean that automatically our kids are going to just turn out. We have other challenges we have to overcome. There are other things we have to work at and make sure that we're conquering, because every situation, even a Christian school, has its own sets of strengths and weaknesses. And this is where the parent comes in. You have to decide what you're doing as far as your child's education is concerned. Do not live under the pressure of comparing yourself with everyone else in the church or even the pastor. You make the right choice, and then you ask the next question, what are the strengths and weaknesses with this? Because every choice has strengths and weaknesses. And then as a parent, you make sure that you overcome. You have a plan to overcome the weaknesses, right? You put your kids in a public school, there's going to be things they may be exposed to. Maybe you can take them out of certain classes. They don't have to be. Maybe you can get permission from the principal during sex education class to have them go to the library and read children's books or something during that time. Maybe that's something you can do as a parent to kind of protect and guard your children. That's something that my parents did when I was in public school. There are things you can do like that. Be involved. Don't just send them off to something and go on autopilot. Be involved. Know what's happening. Make choices as a parent to guide the process. You also have to make sure you're overcoming peer influence. What am I doing as a parent to help my child not be overwhelmed by wrong influences in that public environment? If you do that right, you're going to teach them how to live in a public world someday. That's a very powerful opportunity, but you really have to work at it. We homeschool, so we have to ask questions like, is there anything that me and my wife have weaknesses in that if we're not careful, because we're the main influence all week on our kids, that they're going to be magnified in our children's lives? If anyone in the church talks to me about a need in my child's life, I really listen to that, because I don't want my blind spots and Sarah's blind spots to be magnified in my children's life because of our regular influence in their life. I want them to be involved. We're going to teach them to talk to people at church because they might miss out on some of that being at home all week. You see what I'm saying? You have to balance some of these things out. So what are the strengths and weaknesses of our situation? And as a parent, sometimes as a parent, you realize there are some really good things happening in the school your child's in, but there are certain things that are lacking. Maybe there's not a lot of discipline in the school environment that they're in, or maybe there's other activities that they're not getting to participate in. Or maybe they're in a class where there's a big range of needs in that class and the teacher's teaching to the lowest group of students. And so your kid, who has a lot more potential, is not really being challenged. And so you have to look at ways to challenge that child outside of class, because as a parent, you know that child. You can't blame the school. You have to find other ways to make sure that that child is being fully developed. It's not the school's responsibility. It's yours. You're just using that school as one of the main vehicles to accomplish your goal. For us, we homeschool, but then I'll send Josh off to baseball to work on some baseball and some social and some physical skills that he needs to develop. Looking at things to do with Emily, one thing I'd like to see her work on maybe is to get out under someone else and maybe learn to do some horseback riding. That would be a dream for her, but it would teach her some very powerful life skills. I'm still trying to figure out how to make that work. But we're always looking at our kids trying to figure out how can we enhance. We bring in an outside piano teacher to teach our kids. I could teach piano to my kids. My wife could teach piano to our kids. But right now we're choosing to pay to bring in someone else. I don't even think the person's saved to come into our house and to teach our kids just to give them that experience, because it's more than learning music. I want them to learn how to have an unsaved instructor. She's a very nice lady, but I want them to have that experience. And we're just trying to look at all of these things. We're not just looking at can they play the piano? Do they have music on their resume? Why do we want them to learn music? There's a character we want to develop in them. One of our kids is more natural at loves to play the piano. The other one does good when they do well, but it is like pulling teeth to get them to practice. Well, more than just the musical side of things, just teaching them to practice is a very important life skill. It's more than just what do my kids like and said, I'll throw them into it. You really want them to do things that will challenge them, even if they don't like it, to learn how to overcome that. And so we're talking here about making sure that your child is fully developed. Whatever works for you, maybe every year, maybe the start of every school year, maybe the start of a school year, maybe the start of the summer. Maybe at those 2 points in the course of a year, you stop as a husband and wife or as a single parent and you evaluate, where's my child at? Where are the strengths and the weaknesses? What are they getting in their schooling venue? What are they not getting? What are the strengths and weaknesses in my child and their situation? Is there anything that I can do to provide some added emphasis here or there? It's more, though, than just this broad education, this full comprehensive education that our kids need to have in all subjects and abilities. We're also talking here about a basic one or two life skill sets that prepare your child to take care of themselves. We've kind of lost this, and it's a challenge to find ways to bring this back, but it's a very important thing. Children were not just, back at this time, they were not just taught basic subjects of information from a book. They're also trained in doing things. In particular, men were trained with a basic skill set, often of something that the father could do or did. Or he would bring someone in and put his son under them as an apprentice to learn a different skill. Of course, Jesus was taught by his father Joseph to be a carpenter. It's not what he ended up doing for his life, but he could do it. He had a skill set. He couldn't do everything, but he had one thing that he could do in particular. He could work with wood with his hands. He could do carpentry. He could build a house. Paul was a tent maker. He was a leather worker. He knew how to cut an animal up and tan the hides and make tents out of this. And he, if he had to, could fall back on that and use that, even though he didn't end up doing it with his life. Many of the disciples were fishermen. And you could go down the list. There were different skills that these kids would be taught. And sometimes our kids get raised only on book knowledge, and they get to the point of college when they really should begin to be treated as adults, and they're still not able to take care of themselves because they still can't work a meaningful job and get up and show up on time and all these kind of things and earn a paycheck. Especially for a boy, there is something very formative and something very satisfying about earning a paycheck. and you really want to have a goal as parents of that not happening after college. You want that to happen before. You want them to go in with something that they can do. They may not have a whole skill or a whole trade under their belt. In our culture, that might be hard. Maybe it's not impossible. But you want them to begin to learn things. One thing that I've thought about as pastor is we have family camp this week, or this year coming up in 18. We took off a year. We're going to do it next year. One thing I've been looking at, maybe a year ahead, like to 2019, I'm still brainstorming with Chris at Tri-State Bible Camp. I'm brainstorming maybe doing a camp for fathers and sons or something like this, or anyone else who's interested, and going out to Tri-State Bible Camp for a week and doing things that we don't do in the city very much, like go out and bale some hay for a day. Maybe go out and learn to chop firewood. Maybe you learn how to run a gas weed trimmer and to go out and trim for 3 hours and come back vibrating with your hands all green and a little swollen and sore from doing that. Maybe we're talking about cutting a tree down, or maybe he needs to build a shed out there at the camp, and if he's willing to put up with us city folks, we'll go out there and he'll teach us how to build a shed there out at Tri-State. Maybe dig a ditch or run an electric line or things like this. Maybe there'll be someone out there who could pull up some cars and we could line up some cars on some blocks and teach all of our sons how to change the oil, how to replace a spare tire. We could get Francisco to come out and teach us these things. But this is something that I have in my mind, because for me, growing up in a rural area, I did a lot of these things. I'm not near as skilled as Curtis or Sam in a lot of things. I'm not Pastor Sawyer. I can't build a building. But I did learn how to work. I got scratched up, sweated up, and saved up. I did a lot of things growing up, and we lose that opportunity. Pushing stuff at a counter at Walgreens in high school is just not really learning a great work ethic at the end of the day. And so parents, tuck that away. What I'm saying, I'm looking at ways to provide opportunities like that. I've even talked to the camp about bringing Chaplain Willis, who was a captain in the Army. You remember when he came in here? He worked at the top level with Governor General Petraeus and all these people as a chaplain over in the Middle East before he retired. He's done things like this, even sending our kids, parents who want to go along, especially boys, out into the woods for a couple days and just live off the land, learn how to get your meat, learn how to cook the meat, learn how to build a tent, build a fire. Anyone interested in those kind of things? You go through an experience like that, especially coming from an urban environment. Young boys might come in complaining, it's raining, I need to go inside. No, we're staying out tonight. Start a fire. Build a lean-to. Get under that thing. Cook your own food. Learn how to cut a tree down. You come out of those experiences feeling more like a man, feeling like if something happened to you, you could take care of yourself. And then you begin to learn how to problem solve and look at new situations and solve things that way. So as a pastor, this is one thing I want to do is I'm looking at not just my kids, but all of our kids and saying, what do we miss out on in the city in developing our children to be full, well-rounded individuals who could do anything for God? But as parents, we also need to be looking for opportunities. Don't wait for the church and the pastor to dream something up. You be working at it. But what skill sets? What about girls? I think girls also should be learning skill sets. We need to do a better job, though, at encouraging our girls to see the value in being a homemaker, to see the value in taking care of a house. This sounds really old-fashioned, I know. But girls really should know how to sew. They should know how to mend things. They should know how to cook. They should know how to clean. There's the way of cleaning and the cleaning well. They should learn how to build a grocery budget on a certain amount of money and how to buy that food and to put together 1 or 2 weeks worth of recipes based upon one shopping list. That includes things that will spoil and things that won't. That includes the possibility of some things being left over and how to turn that into a different meal the next day and keeping it all balanced. These are things that our young ladies grow up and they get married, they feel very insecure about. They're very nervous because their fiance was always taking them out to nice restaurants, but then they get married and it's time for them to make the food. And that's not something that usually when you're dating or courting or whatever you want to call it, you don't necessarily go over to your fiance's house and try to see how she's going to cook. You just kind of assume this happens, and then the girl's very nervous about this. And she may have a college degree and be a nurse or something, a lawyer or an accountant, but cooking, oh dear. And she gets very nervous. But if a girl knows how to do all these things, she's very confident and she's very assured. And we need to help our girls especially become very well-rounded in these things. What about doing some events in the church where we teach these things and we encourage them? All of that being said, I'm talking about emphasis. Boys especially should learn some basic trade skills. In a church, we need to help each other tackle that. Girls especially should learn domestic skills, but I did not say exclusively. So boys especially learn trade skills. It might include technology. It might include programming. It might include things like that too today. They also, ladies need to especially learn domestic skills. By the way, though, boys should know some domestic skills and girls should probably develop some trade skills. So it's not exclusive. I'm just talking about where the emphasis should be and what we've missed out. We just so push, be smart, get 4.0 in all your subjects, go to college, get a high-level degree, and then work a career. It misses so many things. And you're producing career-minded people who feel very nervous about other basic parts of life. And we have to kind of enhance that. And as a church, we can help solve some of that too. We need to meet physical needs as well. Educational needs are very important. As parents, don't just pick a school and then ride the wave. You continually have to evaluate, continue to have to meet needs, and continue to have to find ways to provide your kid with a full... Here's the thing. If you don't do that, your kid grows up, they reach 18, and either number one, everyone expects them to know everything about their life, and they're very insecure because they feel like they have big missing pieces in their life. They just don't want anyone to know. Or, number two, they're so underdeveloped, they don't even feel like an adult. There's a word called adulting. It's a new word. Have you heard of this? Adulting. They say adulting isn't happening today until after 30 years old now. It means people are not living an independent adult life until after 30 years old. Everyone keeps living with their parents. By the way, in the city, I know we all love our kids, and we know how things are expensive around here, but sometimes I think we do baby our kids a little too much. And I have to raise my kids before I have to keep saying that every year and see if I say it 10 years from now. But I just remember my dad, there were some things he said, you are getting a job. As a teenager, I had to get a job, and there are things you have to juggle here in the city, I know, that way, but you can be creative. You can be creative. Can kids freelance? I mean, can a kid, there are online freelancing things. And if a kid in early high school can write with good grammar, is that a bad, can you write with good grammar as a freshman in high school? You should be able to. And if you're in a regular public school education, you may not be able to because there are other people who can't and your kid might be undertaught. But told that they're a really good student, and you have to be careful of some of these things. Make sure that your kid is getting what they can be to be all that they should be. And maybe with parental guidance, they could do freelancing and do some translating of business documents online per job, and you can put out bids and underbid people and just begin to develop this and feel what it's like as a kid to have money coming in, and then you as a parent teach them to automatically deposit that in their savings account. But freelancing, and we get a few people here in the church. Maybe Francisco can teach some guys in our church how to change oil. Maybe as a church, we figure out who that teen is. A teen, this is scary, right? Who can change oil. And maybe we all learn to encourage that kid by paying them a little less than what we would pay down the road. But we know that kid can change oil. This kid can change the oil for us in the church. We can encourage them. You see what I'm saying? There's things we can do, and maybe we just need to start thinking creatively as a church. How can we help our young people develop themselves more? This is a part of a larger conversation we can have over time. Computer programming, there's so many different ways, even in a city. We don't have big farm fields to go and work in all the time. But we still don't have to give up. We can keep thinking about this. So developing our kids' educational skill set, but meeting physical needs. Jesus also increased and made progress in his physical development. This does go without saying, but children need parents to provide them with a proper diet. And every family is going to do this a little bit differently. We have to be careful that we don't overthink some of this. Proper diet does not necessarily have to be the latest fad that society is pushing, because you're probably a part of a big case study if that's what's going on. The big fad right now is organic, buying everything organic. Well, I know a lot of people who were raised on just farm food and other stuff who had health problems. I know a lot of people who go all organic and have health problems. Going all in on some trend may actually end up wasting you money if you're not careful. So just think. Stop and think. At the same time, you don't need to jump all hands into every fad that comes along in Parenting Incorporated magazine. I mean, people are paying them to put all that stuff in those magazines. You know that, right? So don't just jump into all the fads in the world. At the same time, your kids should not be growing up on soda and Doritos, right? We also know that. So stop and think. What kind of diet am I providing for my children? Also think about this. Whatever you do with your children is setting a precedent. Because whatever you do, that's probably what they're going to do when they grow up. So if you're building bad habits of poor eating, or maybe trendy patterns that are not necessarily realistic or sustainable, they may end up being the same kind of thing. I mean, my parents would go through fads as a kid, and I'd watch this, and different like healthy eating, and then they were always try the next one, let's try the... You know the best thing? Just be balanced. Just be balanced. Make sure you have all the different categories of food in there. A lot of processed food is probably not... You know, just be balanced. As a pastor, I can't tell you how to eat, but I can say to be balanced. That is a biblical thing. Care should be given to providing proper nourishment that causes neither malnutrition nor indulgence. If that makes sense. Don't spoil your kids with fancy foods every single day. But at the same time, make sure they're fed well. They shouldn't be starving and so on and so forth. So I think not a lot needs to be said about this. I will add to this, though, they also, in their physical development, need to also develop beyond just food, their ability to work. Lamentations 3:27 says, "It is good for a child to bear the yoke in their youth." Don't feel sorry for your kid by making them work. Right now, Josh sweeps the floor after dinner, and Emily washes the dishes after dinner, and James is supposed to clean the table after dinner. We're working on that. They're doing a pretty good job at this. Josh also takes out the trash, and it's a cool thing to do in our house right now. And so James wants to help take out the trash. Sam wants to help take out the trash. That's really popular in our house right now. I'm for that. There's other things I wish were popular too. Don't feel bad. Sometimes, again, here in the city environment, if we're not intentional about teaching our kids to work, we baby and pamper our kids way too much. And they go off to college, and they've never had to do anything but lift a spoon to their mouth. That's not taking care of your kids. That's setting them up for failure. You have to let them make some mistakes. You have to let them sweat a little bit and get sore. Okay? I grew up in the country, and I would sometimes in high school, during the summer, I'd get up at 4 or 5 in the morning, and I'd jump on the truck, and I'd go out to the farm fields, and I was baling hay in the hot sun all day, and I had my arms scratched all from here to here. I had micro scratches all over my arms. I was as tan as anything because in the sun all day. Sweating all my scratches all day. And then I'd jump in the truck with my boss. We'd go back to the restaurant at 3. I'd take a quick shower. I'd change my clothes. and I'd wash dishes and fry greasy chicken all night. And I ate fried chicken every night, 4 or 5 nights a week for 4 years, and I'm doing fine. So no blood pressure issues, all these kind of things. So life's a funny thing, right? We get into things, and sometimes at the end of the day, just be balanced. God's going to take care of you. But I get home from the kitchen, 11 o'clock at night sometimes, and I'd lay down on the couch, and I'd sleep. And it wasn't the kind of sleep that you don't have when you play computer games all day. You know what I'm saying? You kind of start feeling like, why am I laying in bed again? I didn't do anything today. Those are some of the best nights of sleep I ever had. And some people thought that my dad was probably too tough on me. And I look back, and I have my dad's voice in my ear, son, I will take care of you. He did food, clothing, my first car, all of that was provided. But he said, your college bill is yours. I'm just saying, you got to find a way. Having to innovate, having to be creative, having to feel that pressure is good. I was 14, I was 15, I was 16, I was 7. You know, that was good for me. And in the city, I have to talk about this because we don't do this very well. We don't. So think about it, talk about it as spouses. I think over the years, some of us with young kids are going to have some great ideas and we're going to be able to learn from each other. But don't just let city life happen and then get frustrated with your kids and they're frustrated when they grow up and they're just half-baked. That is frustrating. Sports and athletics are also appropriate in their place. Don't live for them. But I've seen even with Josh, getting him out and watching other unsaved coaches yell at him and make him run around and do things is good for him. And I'm not fostering this, you have to be this champion and elite kind of person. No, I'm fostering, build relationships, listen to people when they tell you what to do. I'm not stepping in, and I'm not, when you're crying, I'm not stepping in there and saying, please be nice to my son, you know. No, I'm standing back and saying, Lord, would you help him deal with this? And then afterwards, we'll talk about it. You have to have those experiences. We also have to meet spiritual needs. Jesus increased in wisdom, his education, his skill development. He also improved in his physical development. Think about this. Jesus walked a lot, miles and miles and miles and miles. He was a rugged person. He could also build houses and all kinds of things. And he preached and taught with eloquence. One of my favorite examples in the Bible of fully developed manhood, it's a good goal for all of us, is King David. King David was a man who could play with the best of them on the front line. If I say the Giants, that's not even very attractive right now. Giants, Jets. Jets are a little better. You pick a football team or pick a soccer team, whatever you want to do. A sport that puts you out on the front lines and you're beating people to the ground. David could get out and could fight with the best of them. You don't want to be in a cage with David if you're his enemy. He would take you down. He would win. At the same time, David played the harp and was called the sweet psalmist of Israel. He wrote poetry, beautiful, sweet poetry. A man who can fight with the best of them and then can turn around and play the harp, that's well-rounded. He could write. He could articulate. He could lead. He could fight. He could play a harp. We need to have those kind of goals for our kids and then figure out how to get there with them. And I think by 18, we should be a lot farther along with that than we usually are. Meeting spiritual needs, I've talked a lot about this, so I'm not going to talk a lot about this here. It's some of its review. But your child needs to have a personal relationship with God, and you don't just sit back, drag them to church, and wait for this to just happen. Frontline is very good for that because it makes our kids have to read the Bible every day and write something down. That's a very important thing. The other day, Josh, I was out of town. I was doing a research project, and I was off at Princeton, and I spent the night with a friend because I was doing some intensive research on a paper I was writing. And so I wasn't home that night, and I told Josh, I thought of this last minute. It was like an hour before devotions I called. I said, can you do devotions tonight? He's 9 years old. Sure, I can do that. And so what was the verse? There was a verse in Proverbs. Oh, he said, Sarah said, you should have heard it, honey. He did a devotion on short notice on how can a man take fire into his bosom and his clothes not be burned? I thought, I know what passage that is. It's talking about how a man should not get involved with prostitution and immorality, relationships like that, and it's kind of a sensitive passage. I thought, oh dear, how did he get into that passage? She said his brothers were hanging on every word, and he was explaining this. But bless his heart, he just stuck to that verse. He didn't read the whole passage. He stuck to that verse, and she said, honey, he went through word by word what the words meant, and he explained that when you commit sins, they will hurt you, and you can't do sins, and they don't hurt you. It's like putting fire in your clothing, and your clothing will burn. It's just going to happen. And his boys, his son, his brothers were asking him questions, and she said it was a great devotion. That's encouraging. That kind of personal ownership of spiritual things. We have a lot to work on with our kids. But those little glimmers of hope, don't wait for your kids to kind of catch lightning in a bottle at a youth retreat when they're 17. That's not how you raise young people. You have to show them, you have to teach them, give them opportunity. What did you learn from the Bible today? And over time, God begins to minister to them personally. But make it a goal. Work with your children on that. Talk to them about their Bible reading, about their prayer life. Jesus did that. We'll say things about that, I'm sure, other times. Last, we have to meet social needs. So educational needs must be met comprehensively. Talk about it with your spouse. Make sure you're not missing anything. Find ways to solve those things. Physically, a proper balanced diet, but also medical care, that also falls, and make sure they get proper care. Physical development, are they able, do they have good physical skills? Are they able to handle things that way? Spiritual needs, social needs. Favor with man. It is not right. I'm going to say this. It is not right for kids to be raised kind of passively. They become teenagers, and all of a sudden, everyone's frustrated with them. That is very discouraging because it goes both ways. We have to raise our children with a vision and a purpose for life. They have to learn how to talk to people and interact with people who are not their peers. And this does not happen automatically. If you just drag your kids to church and wait for this to happen, it will not work. You have to teach them to talk to people. And I've talked some about this. But what are we doing to teach our children to value relationships with older people? To sit down and to listen to older people. Let me say, older people in the church, if you don't have kids in this church even, please, my kids, Sam's kids, Alex's kids, I mean, whoever's kids are here, Sora's, all of us, Francisco's, sit down and talk to our kids. Please, sit down and talk to them. And they may look at you funny or run away or be shy or not say anything, but it's a process that has to be started. Our kids should expect when they come to church, any grown-up in the church might have a conversation with them. And adults, be secure enough to be okay with some of the responses you get, but keep working at it. They'll learn from you so many things. They'll treasure those things, and eventually they'll appreciate, and they'll be able to give things back to you. You'll start getting phone calls from kids in our church when you're in the hospital, and you build these relationships. Dave Bennett, who was here a couple of years ago, he said his kids got jobs, all kinds of jobs, and they didn't even have to put out resumes because wherever they went, they just learned how to talk to people. And because they could do that, everyone thought they were amazing, out-of-this-world kids because they were junior hires and teens who could carry on full-length conversations with adults. And you can get jobs over that. Young, you can get jobs, good jobs. That skill set does a lot for kids. And they're able to communicate. One of the things that helped me as a kid inadvertently was I was in a small church of 30 to 40 people out in Indiana. It was very rural. And I was the youth group, me and my siblings. We didn't have any other kids in the church. I had to talk to older people. I felt a little bit disenfranchised back then, But looking back, that really helped me. I still to this day feel much more comfortable talking to people older than me than I do my peers, and I've had to work at that. That's a weakness that I have. But the strength is also valuable. So we do have to work together as a church on that. Parents need to also work at that. Make sure your kids learn how to show proper respect to an adult. Sometimes it's as simple as telling your kids, give eye contact when someone talks to you. You see they're not doing it, you keep working at eye contact until they can do that. Then start saying hi to people. Start working at that. Just little things at a time. Also teach them how to be friendly. If you're going to have friends, you have to show yourself friendly, right? Teach them how to write notes and send notes in the mail to encourage people. Sometimes my kids will draw pictures, and I'll say, hey, why don't you send that to someone in the church instead of us throwing it away or putting them all in our refrigerator? Why don't you send that to so-and-so? They're shut in, and they would really like that picture from you. How would you like to get a random picture in the mail with a note from one of the kids in our church? That kid would all of a sudden increase in favor with you, right? We have to help our kids have those kind of experiences throughout our church and our life as young people. Very important. You have to be involved as a parent. Teach them how to avoid the wrong kind of friends, the kind of friends they don't want to have. Ultimately, this is the responsibility of parents. Make sure you're balanced. Every now and then, have a little review with your spouse. And that usually is, you not always, but usually is, the wife having your husband present to be able to tell him what's going on and then help him helping come up with some solutions, seeing if they can afford whatever needs to be done, and these kind of things. But have these conversations. What is my kid getting at school? What are they getting at church? Where are the weaknesses? Where are the strengths? Sometimes as parents, one, two, or three of these categories we really focus on. In New York City, the education is really focused on. We really value that. But sometimes we lift that up so high, we're running around to every possible thing we can do to give our kid every possible educational experience so that they have every possible piece of knowledge in their bag, that their spiritual life is like way over here and microscopic. Or they're very intelligent, but they don't know how to interact with people in real life. Or they're very, very spiritually minded, but they couldn't work if their life depended on it because they never learned how to do that. They just read their Bible and pray all the time. It's not usually the problem, but we just have to make sure we're balanced in our approach. We're not trying to raise Albert Einsteins, but balanced people who are very well-rounded. When a child reaches adulthood, and I think we can make a case that 16 to 18 is a good target range for that, not 30. They should be very confident individuals in the Lord, and we should all be very impressed with them and impacted by them. Then they go off to college, and college will take care of itself because we've worked at it. The church, there are things we can do. But parents, take responsibility. Target these four areas. Make sure you're meeting these needs. We're talking about not frustrating our kids, right? Do kids get frustrated when any of these areas of their life are not properly developed? When they're malnutritioned in social skills, malnutritioned in work skill sets, and you know what they usually think? It kind of goes back to mom and dad. Why didn't they help me? And they're very embarrassed, insecure. And I'd love to see us all do a good job of that as a church. Any feedback on this? Some of these things we may break down and talk about more in depth individually later on. But any feedback at all? Any thoughts? Yeah. Church plays a vital role in this. Yeah. What are the sentiments on my 2019 brainstorm, sending our kids out for a week to survive and to work and learn some skills? Chop firewood and change oil. Is that radical? Is that crazy? Or is that a good idea? Good idea. Anyone willing to help with some of that? If we pull it off, we may have different tracks, and yeah, not just boys need some of this stuff. We need to have a big vision for our kids, more than just making sure they get 4.0s in science class. There's a whole lot more to the picture. I do not believe that. No child is automatically set in stone and unable to change. Question is, and you can't, as one person or as mom and dad, force every change on them that you want to see right this instant either. Things take time and there's a bigger picture. But a lot more can happen if we learn how to get there. And a lot of it has to do with our approach and really finding different ways. Sometimes the way we try, we just do more of it instead of stopping what we're doing and finding a different way of coming at it. It just takes a lot of effort. We're going to talk more about that later when it says in Proverbs 22, train up a child in the way he should go, understanding individuals. I've talked here about children in general, the needs that all children have. You also have to know each child individually and their personality type and their strengths and weaknesses and work on them as individual personalities. Ultimately, I think there's just, you've noticed, I've not talked about spanking yet. And some people have said, should I not spank because that'll frustrate my kid? No, you should spank. We're going to talk about that. There's a time and a place for that. But unfortunately, we often think that lecturing our kids without trying, getting frustrated with them when they mess up, dragging them to church and then spanking them, that raises them. No. Spanking is a part of child raising. But I'm deliberately putting it off because I want us to understand there are so many other aspects to parenting. We have to see the big picture and then put that in its proper place as a part of the whole package. Does that make sense? There's a time and place for that. But it's not the automatic solution to everything. Lecturing, dragging them to church, and then spanking. That is not child raising. Okay? And sometimes that's what we do. And then we hope by sending them off to a teen retreat, that'll solve everything because they'll have a high-powered preacher who will yell at them and fix. No. We have to develop the whole person and be very focused and creative about that. Right. Yeah, I mean, Josh, for instance, he loves baseball. But if I'm not careful, we could go hog wild and just do that all the time. He would love it, but we're going to miss other things. So we have to look kind of across the board. I said, Josh, we're not doing baseball this fall. We're doing piano lessons. No, I'm sorry. We are doing that. And if you do a good job at that, we'll come back and we'll do baseball in the spring. We're not doing everything. We're going to do what you need as a whole person. And that's what we kind of have to do as parents. And every kid is different. Some cultures really push academic excellence, but it almost becomes a god. And you know, not every kid needs to be an Einstein. They just need to be well-rounded. And then their personality needs to be understood. That needs to be fostered so it can be all that that person can be. Sometimes that person who's just stubborn doesn't want to change, sometimes there's a strength there, and it just needs to be flipped around. My sister was very stubborn as a kid. Very. I mean, very. You could hear it. But that was when she was a young kid. My mom and dad worked with her, and a lot of that changed. And today, she is also very stubborn, but I'm going to say it's in a different way. It's for the Lord. She is so serious about the Lord and doing what is right. And it's so sweet. It's a challenge to me. But the weakness didn't need to be destroyed. It needed to be flipped around. And sometimes that kind of is what needs to happen sometimes too. Sometimes that lazy, laid-back kid is the kind of person that needs to develop that people love to come and talk to them. They love to come and talk and they just listen and they're just kind of very easygoing and patient. And there's probably a wife out there who's high-strung who needs that kind of person. And you don't want to mess that kid up and make them something they're not. You just want to turn that easygoing personality into a well-rounded personality that people love to be around. Does that make sense? We'll talk more about that later, the individuals themselves. Well, this is good. We have more to talk about other sessions. We hope to have you come back. Let's close with prayer and head up for some food. Lord, help us as a church to know what your word says about parenting and to understand that so well that we're able to apply it in our lives. Thank you that your word does not just teach us how to have a church service and how to pray. It teaches us how to live. I'm so thankful for that. Help us as parents to overcome our weaknesses, to raise our children. And it's my hope that someday Faith Baptist Church will be producing even more children than we have in the past who are confident in life, who are well-rounded, who are so successful at accomplishing what you made them to do. Help us to avoid the many traps of materialism and mere success and a competition and all these kind of things. And may we just be focused on your will. Give us ideas as a church for how we can do things, even like the camp that I talked about, and pooling the strengths and abilities of the people in our church to help our children be well-rounded and overcoming the urban challenges that we face. Give us wisdom. We look forward to what you're going to do. Bless the food. In Jesus' name, amen.